Genesis 46, we're continuing on in our series through the book of Genesis. Joseph has now been reconciled with his brothers after decades of conflict and hatred. They're now reconciled. God has orchestrated all these events to raise Joseph up as the second in command in Egypt. And now that he's reconciled with his family, he invites his family to come down and live with him here in Egypt. This chapter records this journey. I'm not going to read the entire chapter, just those first seven verses, which I'd say are the heart of what's happening in this chapter. So listen to God's word. It's this truth that sets you free, so listen. Genesis 46. So Israel took his journey with all that he had and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to the God of his father Isaac. And God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, Here am I. Then he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for there I will make you into a great nation. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you up again, and Joseph's hand shall close your eyes." Then Jacob set out from Beersheba. The sons of Israel carried Jacob, their father, and their little ones and their wives in the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry him. They also took their livestock and their goods, which they had gained in the land of Canaan, and came into Egypt, Jacob and all his offspring with him, his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters. All his offspring he brought with him into Egypt. That's where we're going to end the reading of God's holy word. May he use his word to continue to transform our minds according to his word. People don't like change. Change is hard. That's true of us it's true of all of us from one degree to another. Some of us are maybe a little more entrenched in our ways than others, but generally for all of us, change is a hard thing. An article in the Huffington Post said it this way: people genuinely believe, often on an unconscious level, that when you've been doing something a particular way for some time, it must be a good way to do things. And the longer you've been doing it that way, the better it is. We all resist change because we're loyal to the way we've always done things. This is something that newlyweds have to work through when they start out in their married life. If their moms did things differently from each other, they will both come into this marriage with a loyalty for how their mom did it, thinking that's the way it should be done because that's the right way. We develop this allegiance to the way things have always been done. Why do we do that? Why do we develop such an allegiance to the way we've done things for years? Well, if we were going to brainstorm, we could come up with quite a few reasons, but I'm just going to mention one of the reasons why. A major reason why we hesitate to change is simply because we're afraid. Because we're afraid. When you've been doing something for a long time, it becomes familiar. You know how to do it. You know how it works. You know where the problems are, so you can avoid those problems. It yields a predictable outcome because you've been doing it for years. And if it's not broke, you don't fix it, right? Well, when you change, you have to learn a new system. You have to figure out where the problems are. You aren't nearly as sure about the outcome. In short, change is risky, and risk is scary. And so we stick with what we know. We don't want to move because what if there are other problems that we don't foresee? What if we don't make new friends? I don't look for a new job because maybe it's not as dependable or won't be as dependable as the one I already have. Change opens us up to risk, and risk is scary. Perhaps one that hits close to home as a congregation, there's risk in the consideration and the conversation about becoming two congregations. We have two locations, and we're talking about becoming two congregations. And we can make decisions out of fear because of the what ifs. There's lots of what ifs. What if it makes us fragile? What if it doesn't work out well? What will happen to our relationships? Do we have enough money, resources? What if we crash and burn? It's a risk full of what ifs. Well, in this chapter, Jacob faces a major change in his life. He's 130 years old. That's very old. Makes all of us feel young. 130 years old. He's lived in the land of Canaan his whole life. His family has lived there for now 215 years. That is just barely less than the age of our own country. That's a long time. This is the promised land. It's not a perfect place, of course, but it's familiar. We know where the problems are. We know who we can trust, who we can't. This is home. But now, because of the famine, Jacob is forced to leave his home and to move to Egypt, which might as well be the other side of the world. And he's moving his whole family down there, and he's afraid. It opens him up to lots of risks. He's afraid of the unknowns, afraid of the what ifs, what might happen. And with these fears swirling, Jacob and his family, they arrive at the southern border of the promised land in the town of Beersheba. And there Jacob offers sacrifices to the Lord. And it's here that the Lord speaks directly to his fears. And he says to him, "Don't be afraid. Do not be afraid. This is a huge change, but don't be afraid." All of us here on some level are going through some change. Some of you are in the midst of huge life changes. And there are lots of unknowns about the future, and it can fill us with fear. Well, through this passage, God speaks directly to you. And he says, "Do not be afraid." You hear me, Jensens? Do not be afraid. You hear me, college seniors? Do not be afraid. You hear me, congregation? Do not be afraid. As you face change, do not be afraid. After Joseph is reconciled to his brothers, he, of course, tells them all to go back, bring their families down to Egypt to live off the fat of the land. So they go back to Canaan, and they tell Jacob, their father, that Joseph is alive, and he's actually ruling in Egypt. And Jacob, after a moment of unbelief, after he realizes that they're actually telling the truth, Jacob is overjoyed that his son is still alive, and he is excited to go down to Egypt to see his son. So that's the end of chapter 45. They pack up here at the beginning of chapter 46. They begin their journey down to Egypt. This is a journey that probably would have taken somewhere between 20, 30 days, maybe even more. Roughly the distance between here and Harrisburg, 250 miles about. That back then it would have taken 10 days maybe. If it's just you and your donkey, you can move, but 20, 30, maybe more if you have livestock and kids and all your stuff. That's a long journey. In effect, it's across the world. So they set off on their journey. They get to the town of Beersheba. Beersheba is a town that marks the southern border of the promised land. This is the last little bit of home for them to enjoy before they go down to Egypt. Many years earlier, Abraham, Jacob's grandfather, he dug a well there and lived there in Genesis 21. Isaac dug more wells there, built an altar there in Genesis 26. Jacob himself had spent time in Beersheba. That's actually where he ran and fled from his brother Esau after he tricked his brother out of the blessing of their father. And so when they leave here, they're going to be leaving home. They leave here, they're leaving the promised land. And so they pause. And it's that night that Jacob offers sacrifices to God. And that night, God speaks to Jacob. He says, "Do not be afraid. Do not be afraid, Jacob." Why does God say that to Jacob? Well, the simple logic tells us that God said that to Jacob because Jacob was afraid. At the end of chapter 45, we see that Jacob is excited to go and see Joseph. We see his excitement at the end of chapter 45, but he's also afraid of all the risks of such a big move. You know, this is often the mix that swirls on within our own hearts and minds. We're, in one sense, very excited about the future, but in another very real sense, we're also scared about the future. You kids, you might be excited about going to a new school for the first time, or starting on a new team for the first time, but you're also a little bit scared about how it's going to work out. You're excited to go to college for the first time, but there's a lot of nerves that are wrapped up in your stomach that day of class, first day of class. You're excited, but you're scared as well. And when you graduate, you're excited to go out into the world, but at the same time, you're nervous and scared about what comes next. Every change brings this mixture of excitement and fear. Some of us are more fearful than excited. Others of us are more excited than fearful. But both of these swirl within us. And so God speaks here to your fears, to calm those fears. So as we go through this passage, I want to uncover four of Jacob's fears along with five of God's promises. Four of Jacob's fears along with God's promises, five of God's promises that speak directly to his fears. You'll find that in this passage, Jacob's fears are not directly stated, but from what God says, we can easily understand the fears that Jacob had. So four fears that swirl in Jacob's heart and no doubt swirl in your heart from time to time. Fear number one, what if I'm making the wrong decision? What if I'm making the wrong decision? Do you realize how big of a decision this is for Jacob? He is moving out of the promised land. He's going to the land of Egypt, the most powerful nation in that region. The Egyptians could wipe them out. He's leaving the safety and the comforts of home. This is a move that opens them up to great risk. And he's wondering, am I making the right decision here? I'm guessing that in his own heart, he's thinking, am I moving down to Egypt because I don't have enough faith in God to provide for us in the promised land? Or am I moving to Egypt in faith that God is going to provide for us there? You could argue both sides of this decision as a lack of faith. And this oftentimes is extremely hard for us to discern in our own hearts. Am I moving because I lack faith or because I have faith? It's not always clear. And you may wonder that with every decision you make, whether it's relationships or jobs or majors or where to move or to buy a car, am I acting out of faith or am I acting because I don't have faith? Well, the first thing that God says to Jacob, he says, do not be afraid to go to Egypt. Do not be afraid to go to Egypt. He is confirming the direction that Jacob is going, which is really nice for Jacob. He gets a direct word from God. But what's inferred here in this promise, or what's inferred, the promise that is actually inferred in these words is that God is saying to Jacob, I am directing you where you are to go. I will direct you where to go. As it says in Proverbs 16:9, the Lord determines or establishes or directs your steps. Jacob is afraid of making the wrong decision, but God directs his steps saying, don't be afraid to go to Egypt. I know all of us at one point in life have wished that God would make that clear, make it that clear every time you had a big decision. How many times have you said, God, I will go wherever you want, but just tell me where to go? It seems like that would make life so much easier, far less complicated, if you knew exactly where you wanted God to where God was sending you. But God doesn't do that for us, at least very often, maybe rarely. And since he doesn't do that, we're left wondering, am I making the right decision? Am I making a huge mistake? We face all kinds of decisions every day, some of them big, most of them small, but what if I make the wrong decision? What if I get it wrong here? Kevin DeYoung, in his book, Just Do Something, he says that we can often approach life like a choose-your-own-adventure book. Have you ever read a choose-your-own-adventure book? You can get to the point in the story, and you have the option. You can either flee the country, or you can hide in this cave. So if you flee the country, turn to page 29. If you want to hide in this cave, turn to page 35. So you decide, I'm going to hide in the cave. You turn to page 35, and it turns out that's a volcano, and you died. Wrong decision. You messed up. Thankfully, in that book, you could go back, choose the other one. But in life, you can't do that. You make a decision to go to the cave, you're risking a volcano. You want to be sure that that's the right decision. Otherwise, you're in big trouble. That's how we can view life. And if that's the way we view life, we agonize over every decision, thinking that if I make the wrong decision here, then from here forward, I'm going to be out of God's will for the rest of my life, forever derailed from the life I was really supposed to live. Do you realize how much pressure that puts on every decision you have to make? That is paralyzing. No one wants to make that decision. You college students are notorious for this, but we all struggle with it. And we were all in, you know, of college age, at least before, and not the younger kids, but you, we were all there. What if I choose the wrong major? What if I accept the wrong job? What if I marry the wrong person? What if I broke up with the person I was supposed to marry and I ruined it already? What if I send my kids to the wrong school? It messes them up forever. What if I'm not supposed to move across the country? Maybe I should stay put. What if, what if, what if, or maybe? And we become paralyzed in making any decision because we're afraid it might forever derail our lives. The reality is that you have before you more opportunities, more options, more information than any generation that has come before you. But with all these options comes way more decisions, which can simply paralyze us all the more. I want you to take comfort, because this is not a choose-your-own-adventure book where there is one right decision and the rest are wrong. But God promises to direct your steps. He simply doesn't often do it as directly as he did here with Jacob. And so when you come to that decision point, don't wait to act until you hear directly from God and you hear God's voice in a dream or something. But at this decision point, you pray, you ask God to direct you, you ask advice from those you trust, you make the best decision you can in the moment, trusting that God is directing your steps. You trust that God is directing your steps. What that means right now is that the situation that you're in, you don't have to regret all those decisions that you made in the past, because it's God who is directing you through all those things, just like he did for Joseph. He's directing you through all those things so that he would have you exactly where he wants you. He promises to direct your steps. You know, you should be far less concerned about the various decisions that you have to make and far more concerned with simply walking with God. If you are as concerned to walk with God as you are about what decision I should make, life would be far easier. Because when you're walking with God, you can trust that he'll direct your steps. So don't stress out over the decision. Just simply walk with God and he'll guide you. That's a promise. Promise number one. So that's his first fear. What if I make the wrong decision? The second fear that Jacob struggled with was, what if we go down there, we lose everything? What if it doesn't work out the way I envision? What if I'm just leading my family into big problems? What if my family falls apart there? What if we move down there and Joseph loses his job and then we're all stuck down there? What do we do then? Well, God speaks to that fear and basically says, don't be afraid. I will prosper you. Don't be afraid. I will prosper you. He tells Jacob, don't be afraid because I will make you into a great nation down there in Egypt. It's the promise that I will prosper you. And that's exactly what happened. There were 70 family members that moved down with Jacob to Egypt. A couple hundred years later, there are a couple million of them. In fact, they're so prosperous that the Egyptians eventually become threatened by them. Well, Jacob is afraid that everything's going to fall apart if they move to Egypt, but God says, don't be afraid, I will prosper you. I will make you into a great nation. That's exactly what he did. God actually gives this promise to all his people who walk with him by faith. You can be confident that wherever you go, God will prosper you. Much later on in the history of Israel, the Israelites had rebelled against God, and so he brought in the Babylonians to destroy them. And the Jewish people were exiled. They were scattered over all the known world. And God said to them in Jeremiah 29:11, a very pretty well-known verse, he said, don't be afraid. I have plans to prosper you. I have your welfare in mind. I have a future for you. In short, it's this promise. I will prosper you. Walk with me. I will prosper you. The Christian life in many ways is an exiled life. A life in Egypt or a life in Babylon. In one sense, this land, this world is our home. It will forever be our home as Jesus returns and makes all things new. But right now, it is enemy-occupied territory. And in that sense, we aren't at home. It's a hostile place with lots of unknowns, but God says to you, don't be afraid. I have plans to prosper you. So don't fret yourself about how life is going to work out or how the job's going to work out or finances or friends or logistics or whatever. But continue to be focused on walking with the Lord because as you walk with him, he promises to prosper you. Now, it's very important to keep in mind that this promise is not the guarantee of lots of money and ease and comfort, but rather it's the promise of something far better, spiritual prosperity. You don't want to measure God's prosperity by your bank account or how smooth and easy your life is going. Instead, measure God's prosperity by how much God reveals himself to you. And as he reveals himself to you, it produces the fruit of the Spirit in your life. If your focus is to walk with him by faith, he promises to prosper you in the best possible way. That's promise number two. I will prosper you. Jacob's third fear now was that God wouldn't go with him. He was afraid that God wasn't going to go with him. I mean, he's leaving the promised land. He's afraid that if he leaves, God isn't going to go with him. Why do you think Jacob offered sacrifices there at Beersheba? It's because he wanted God to go with him. And if God wasn't going to go with him, then he didn't want to go. It's like Moses. A few hundred years after this story, Moses was leading the Israelites out of Egypt to return to the promised land. On the way, as the people complained incessantly, God tested Moses to see what he really wanted. And he told Moses, he said, take these stubborn people, go up to the land, I will give you the promised land, I'll make you prosper there, but I will not be coming with you. I will not go with you, Moses. He gave Moses the option of great earthly wealth and comfort and peace and prosperity, earthly prosperity, without God, or to linger there in the desert with God. And Moses said, if you don't go with us, then we're staying here. Don't send us away. We'd rather linger here in the desert with you than be without you in great prosperity. We want you. By offering sacrifices here in Beersheba, this is exactly what Jacob was saying. I'm not going to Egypt unless you come with us. I don't want all the riches of Egypt if you don't come. He wants God above all else. Well, as you go through great change in your life, make sure that this is your constant and chief desire. Do you want God to be with you more than any earthly pleasure or comfort here on earth? Do you want God to be with you more than you want to be married, or more than you want wealth or a great job or an easy life? Do you want God more than anything? When you come to a decision point in your life, in your prayers, tell God something like this. God, this is the direction that I believe we should go. I believe you're leading me in this direction. But if you don't go with us, then don't send us. I'd rather be with you and linger in the desert, linger in limbo for a little longer if you don't go with us, rather than settle in a land of plenty and have great comfort and ease without you. My great desire is for you. At the point of decision, let that be your great desire, to be with God. And as you walk by faith, God promises to you, I will be with you. God will be with you. God told Jacob, don't be afraid, I'll go with you to Egypt. God tells you, don't be afraid, for I will go with you into that land. As you come to decision points in your life, let the words of Jesus ring in your ears. The words that he said to his disciples, behold, I'll be with you always, even to the very end of time. Walk with God by faith, and God will go with you. That's promise number three. The fourth and final fear is that Jacob's afraid that he'll never make it back. He's afraid he'll never come back home. If we go to Egypt, we will be maybe assimilated into the Egyptians. We'll slowly wander from God, take on the Egyptian gods. Will we ever make it back to the promised land? I'm leaving the promised land now. I'm afraid we'll never get back. God tells Jacob, don't be afraid. I will bring you home. I love this promise. What God's telling him is that I will see you through all the trials of your life until it's complete, and when it's complete, I will bring you home. Now, there's historical fulfillment to these words. The Israelites lived in Egypt for a few hundred years there, but God finally brought them back home, and they returned to the promised land. Moses led them to the promised land. But even that fulfillment is just an illustration of the greater promise that God promises to bring us all home into the promised land. We are travelers through this life. This is enemy-occupied territory with trials and temptations along the way, but God promises to see you through it all and in the end to bring you home. As it says in Psalm 73, you hold me by my right hand, you guide me with your counsel, you show me what to do, and afterward, you receive me into glory. You bring me home. This is a promise that's repeated in Philippians chapter 1. It says, he who began a good work in you will carry it to completion until the day of Christ. He'll see you through it, and he'll bring you home. The decisions that you make day by day, they don't have the power to derail this promise. Because if you walk with God by faith, then each decision, God says to you, don't be afraid. I'll be with you through this all, and I'll bring you home. Your travels and your trials in this enemy-occupied territory will soon be over. At death, you'll be received into glory, and at the resurrection, you and this whole world will be made new. That's your destiny. In the face of every decision, let this bring comfort. God will see you through it, and he will bring you home. Now, there's one last thing that God tells Jacob. He says to him, and Joseph's hand will close your eyes. Joseph's hands will close your eyes. Meaning, of course, that on the day that Jacob dies, Joseph will be there to close his eyes. You know, I didn't really think much about this. It looks like a promise that's given to Jacob about his son. But if you remember that this story of Joseph is really to point us to the story of Jesus, we find that this is a great picture for us to close with today. A picture of great comfort. This reminds us that through Jesus, God promises to direct your steps, to prosper you, to be with you, to bring you home. And when that day comes for you to leave this world, his son, your Savior, will be there to close your eyes. He lives with you, he walks with you, he shepherds you along the way, which means that when you come to that day in which God calls you home, when that day comes, you won't be alone. Because it will be his hand that closes your eyes. You'll be in his arms as you're ushered into the presence of his Father. Death is perhaps the biggest change of all in this life. One of the biggest fears that we face, one of the greatest of all unknowns. And there's lots of mystery around it. We have lots of questions about it. And so in the midst of that, the greatest of all changes, God has sent his son to be with you so that on that day, Jesus will be the one who closes your eyes with his own hand. What a profound comfort we have in this life. Change is hard, very hard. Every day we deal with change. It opens us up to risk, and it can easily and often lead us to fear. Remember these promises. God is guiding you. God will prosper you. God will be with you. God will bring you home. And Jesus will close your eyes. Don't fear change. Don't fret over your circumstances. Don't sweat over your decisions, but simply seek to walk with God by faith, and he'll take care of it. Don't be afraid. Trust in God. Let's pray.